Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
If you've been following the latest episode in the checkered history of the Gershwin opera Porgy and Bess, you know that the current Broadway version has fervent champions and critics. I talked to Hilton Alls of The New Yorker, who's all for it.
I think that the current version of the piece, directed by Diane Paulus and slightly rewritten by Susan Laurie Parks, really brings the opera into the 21st century. I think it's a more interesting version of it than I've seen before.
And I talked to John McWhorter of The New Republic, who disagrees.
I worry that this production, in its modern sound, and with these performances that are seductively informal, will be seen as what Porgy and Bess is. And you know what? If that's what Porgy and Bess is seen as being, it's not going to attract any real fervent adherents, because the music wasn't written to be what they've made it to be.
Fair enough. That's part of the current debate. When you start to dig deep into the history of Porgy and Bess, you find out it stimulated high emotions right from the beginning. Certainly George Gershwin felt that way, excited. He came home one night and picked up a book called Porgy by Dubose Hayward. It was on the bestseller list that year, 1926. Our George stayed up all night reading it, couldn't put it down. And instantly he thought of an opera, one that would be big and artistic but accessible, with an all-black cast. He saw in the book a chance to create rich characterizations with plenty of natural places for music already suggested by the story. In the history books, you might also find curious facts. After Dubose Hayward's wife, Dorothy, made a straight play out of her husband's book, Porgy, Al Jolson, the new star of talking pictures back then in the 20s, made a radio adaptation of the play. And after that, the performer offered the authors a fair amount of money for the rights to do a movie adaptation. The idea there was for Jolson to play the part of Porgy in blackface. Hard to imagine the legacy of Porgy and Bess if it had happened that way. It didn't, obviously. It went to the Gershwins. The Gershwins and the Haywards had big dreams for this grand opera, which they began in earnest in 1933. George, who had grown up in Harlem listening to jazz, now made an extended trip to South Carolina so he might soak up some atmosphere that would help him create Catfish Row, the black enclave where it was to be set. The opera opened in New York at the Alvin Theater in 1935. Todd Duncan was Porgy, with Anne Brown as Bess. The first recording came soon after. Then, as now, critics and colleagues were divided. Duke Ellington referred to Gershwin's lamp-black Negroisms. He said there was little connection between the music and the story. The two didn't go together. Composer and critic Virgil Thompson complained Gershwin doesn't even know what an opera is. Olin Downs, the Times music critic, and many of the drama critics warmed to the excellence of the performances, and many agreed it was some of the greatest music the composer had written. But there was always the old argument. What was it? The opera folks, some of them, condemned Porgy and Bess as a hybrid, neither here nor there. The Broadway types found it overblown, a kind of supersized music drama. The original production closed after 124 performances, which was, by the way, the longest continuous run of any opera anywhere up to that point. 2 years later, in 1937, George Gershwin died at age 38, having proclaimed that Porgy and Bess would live again. The work, of course, did continue, even as the culture around it changed. Some found much to question in the portrayal of the inhabitants of Catfish Row. At the same time, it created a platform in the 40s and 50s for great black performers. Leontine Price and William Warfield traveled the world in a production of the opera. Of all things, Porgy and Bess later became the State Department's first offering to the Soviet Union in its program of cultural exchange during the Cold War. But a few years after that, it left the realm of opera and stage completely and found its way to the movies. Sidney Poitier and Dorothy Dandridge, neither of them singers, starred in the liberally dubbed Otto Preminger film. It was released in 1959, deep in the heart of the civil rights movement. The attitude and style of the film seemed to offend just about everyone, not least the Gershwin estate. The movie was withdrawn from release. The work was down again. Porgy and Bess all but disappeared in anything like its original form after that. A whole generation knew every note of the music, in multiple versions from Billie Holiday to Miles Davis. But the opera itself was a mystery. Until the late 1970s, when the Houston Grand Opera did a much heralded production, restoring the work to its full scale. Houston opened the floodgates, and other large-scale productions followed, here and abroad. And the opera was offered at the Met, finally, in 1985.
Oh, Lord, I'm on my way.
Now it is scaled down again, in the more casual version, packing them in on Broadway. The CD is coming out early next week. It will no doubt inspire more comments and questions. What to say about that? Well, it is what it is. It's a bigly conceived work, now less big. One thing to say is, if all this makes you curious about Porgy and Bess, then know and appreciate its history. It is all there. The great voices, lush orchestrations, jazz versions, unfortunate films, racial issues, and musical mishaps. If people are still divided, it may be because Porgy and Bess started with such passion, aroused such feelings, and prevailed through the social upheavals of the 20th century. May it survive this moment, too, among many future iterations, with its heart and songs intact. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishko.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, and the cotton is high.